Thank you for that introduction. I'm Lisa Pearson. I'm a scientist at Land and Water Science based in Invercargill. I've been leading a research project for the National Science Challenge, Our Land and Water, for the last 4 years now. That has been largely mapping the physiographic science nationally. So we've taken the work, the background and all that development that was conducted within Environment Southland, and Clint Rissman and I, who are the lead researchers on this project, have now produced national scale physiographic maps for the country. Part of this project, we were realising that, yeah, it's really great producing science, but if we can't deliver it to the people that actually need this information, it can sit where its value is lost. So we put together in 2018 a Sustainable Farming Fund project, which is funded by the Ministry of Primary Industries, and with a number of industry bodies, developed a web portal for physiographic science. To be able to be a Sustainable Farming Fund project, it needs to be farmer-led. So we have a steering group of five Southland farmers across a range of industries that have helped guide the development, content, and look and feel of this website. It's actually 2 months probably away from a release, and you guys are actually the first people to probably see it publicly, so count yourself lucky here. It is a website, it's not mobile friendly, and it is live, but it's not quite ready for a release. But I'm going to try and do my best to actually give you a bit of a look and feel of the website today. And you can, when you go home, you can also have a look at it at landscapedna.org. So our farmer steering group came up with this name, Landscape DNA, because physiographic science, who knows what that is? Landscape DNA, we all know what our DNA is. It makes us. It's that combination of the building blocks, that all these different things that, yeah, I have blue eyes. These things in the landscape that all come together. So our soils, our geology, our hydrology, our topography, our climate, all those things come together to give a really like a fingerprint or a DNA, DNA signature of our landscape. So this is the site. It's broken up into three main sections: science, which is for really around learning and educational resource to find and understand the interaction between water, the landscape, and how it affects the quality of our waterways. There's a big section, which is probably the main part of the website, which is where you can view the classification, view the underpinning maps to this work. You can zoom right down to farm scale. You can't actually do that presently, but you will be able to. And I'll show you some of the features that you'll be able to do in there. And then we link this to actions that can be done on farm. So this is where we've teamed up with some of the other researchers in the National Science Challenge to find out which mitigations are best placed into what settings. So firstly, I just wanted to start with a bit of a summary of where we think this information is best placed. And we think it's really as a decision support tool. We want to place this information where people can use it to make better and informed land use decision making for environmental management. This is because the physiographic environment classification is typically mapped using our current 1 to 50,000 scale soil maps, 1 to 250,000 scale geological maps. So at a farm scale, there is going to be some slight variation in where that line is drawn on the farm. But that doesn't mean to say it's wrong. And what we do through here is to try and give you the background understanding so you can look for particular features within a farm environment to understand how that all comes together comes together and ultimately affects water quality. So I'll just start off at the science section. We've got a number of sections in here, and what we want to be able to show is how the landscape varies I'll just show some figures that we've made to do this. Where's that one? So when we take this, essentially two main things that control water quality outcomes. The first being the landscape, which we've talked about, and the second one being us. So what we do on the land creates that pressure, and the environment can regulate it. It can, the hydrological processes which transport contaminants to waterways, and the processes that occur within the environment to filter, absorb, attenuate, denitrify, all those things that can remove and hold and prevent contaminant loss are part of the landscape factors. So this is a very simple stylized version of a gradient that may exist across the environment. So the hydrological pathway is a really key critical piece of information, because you could have the same land use activity in each of these different settings, and because of the variation in the landscape, get very different water quality outcomes. A farm over a coarse gravel, where you've got that vertical deep drainage through the soil zone, is likely to have a higher risk of nitrate leaching than any other environment. Conversely, at the other end, those heavy clay soils where water is largely moving laterally or through an artificial drainage network doesn't so much have those problems with nitrate because it's denitrified in the soil zone. But there is a lot of potential for bypass overland flow to quickly export those contaminants to a waterway. So we take this knowledge of what we know about the landscape and how it works together to help predict and explain why we see variation across New Zealand. I'll show you another example of what happens when you get vastly different geologies within a catchment. So this is, to the north is the Waikato River, to the right is the Waipa River. So this is the confluence at Ngarawahia. This is the river after heavy flooding, and the primary difference between these two catchments is not really the land use, but the geology that it's sitting on. The Waikato River is volcanic in origin, so there's very little fine sediment that gets picked up and transported when you have these heavy rainfall events. The Waipa River, on the other hand, is mudstone, soft sedimentary materials that are easily erodible. So it's not to say that the land uses are very different, but the actual landscape setting can really drive that contaminant loss. And we don't lose contaminants all the time. We lose contaminants when it's raining, especially when it's heavy rain and water can be transported fast over the land surface. So here's that same river, the Waipa on the left now and the Waikato on the right, under normal flow conditions. Visibly, there isn't much difference between these two river environments. So what we're looking at within the physiographics is to be able to identify how and when and why these contaminants are transported, so that we can look at what actions are best placed and where to actually minimise their effect. All of us are part of the problem. We've heard that today from the consumer end, from our how much nutrient resources and things like that we're using on farm, and how much we can interact to prevent this loss to a waterway. So I think that is everything I wanted to cover in the science section. I'll just jump now to show you the actual classification map. So firstly, when you come to the website, you will see New Zealand with a physiographic classification that is very similar to Environment Southland's physiographic zones. There are some slight differences, and what that prompts you to do is to firstly zoom into your region. And you can identify your property using a search function by putting in your address, or you can just start to click on the map and identify a location of interest. So here we've found the Aparima catchment. And where I've clicked is picking up the oxidising soil and aquifer zone. What we have highlighted here in blue is the key things that we want people to be able to take away from this map. The contaminant pathway in this environment. Contaminants lost through deep drainage. What the contaminant of concern is, so that would be nitrate, nitrogen. And where do you contribute? Where does the ultimate receiving environment, which is the Aparima River and the New River, not New River, Jacobs River estuary. So different environments all have different risk profiles and pathways. We also look at what happens under developed land compared to natural state. What the landscape is doing to remove contaminants. Are contaminants diluted by other sources of water? Can the soil zone filter and absorb? How much nitrogen is held in the soil or lost? And each of these risk profiles will differ depending on the environment and the combination of those soil, geology, hydrological pathways. So, this map is quite interactive, so you can zoom right down to farm level. You can change things like the transparency and turn on... No, we can't because we're not connected to the internet. You can turn on aerial imagery, so you can see right down to your farm paddock. You can turn on... I'll put that back because that doesn't work. We're not connected. You can turn on things like the river lines to see where those rivers are across the property. And as you zoom right down, more lines will appear to the resolution that matches at farm scale. Some of these waterways at this scale are not visible waterways, but what we'd call ephemeral. So they're only occurring after heavier rainfall and will be existing for a shorter period of time. These are the kind of waterways that actually carry the largest amount of contaminant load because there's so many of these small waterways, and the accumulation of this discharge is what ends up in our rivers. So if we really want to make a difference, we're looking at small, fine scale, farm practical applications that can prevent contaminants entering these small waterways that ultimately, this, when it all sums up to the end of the catchment, can make quite a big difference. So the map section also gives you the ability to zoom to other layers within that we use to make up the physiographic environments. Just close this. There's a what we call a sibling classification, which actually provides more detail that gets hidden into this higher level classification. So within different environments, there is these subunits that slightly subtly change the risk profile. You can also explore some of the hydrology, like things such as, where does the water come from? Areas that are mapped here in yellow are our unconsolidated low-lying areas. So these are the areas where we'd most likely find groundwater and aquifers that we can use as a resource. Hill country areas are mapped in green, and our alpine environments are mapped up in blue. We can look at the risk that overland flow will occur across a landscape. And this is driven largely by the soil properties and slope. We might not, of course it's going to be higher where we've got our steepest, most impervious slopes, so our southern Alps looks very red, but there's not a big contaminant pressure in this environment. So the while we do lose sediment from these locations, it doesn't have a big impact in the waterway because it's very low nutrient, and it's a natural process that would have occurred. That transport of sand and gravels down the waterway is naturally what has built up our lowland environments. What does become critical is these areas that are relatively flat but are used for high-intensity land uses, where we increase the nutrient status of the soil, so that sediment that is lost has a bigger impact in the waterway than the large volume that may be lost from an alpine environment. Other maps that you can view include things like deep drainage, so where is water infiltrating deep through the soil? So in Southland, it's not surprising that Tianau is a nice big red blob. That's why we send our cows up north to have a holiday in Tianau over the winter, because this is a great environment for water moving straight through the soil. It doesn't get very bogged and things like that. But what it does have then is that high risk for nitrate leaching. So this, if you click in these type of areas, that's not meant to happen. Okay, it should give you a description of deep drainage and what that's actually telling you about that location. I've taken the website offline, so it might not work behave as it should. One of the key differences in the maps that we've done is this natural soil bypass layer. So in the physiographic zone classification, the central plains are identified as having a high bypass risk. So that's where soils can crack and the shrink swell properties. So when they get very dry, cracks can open up. And this provides a bypass mechanism for water to transport very quickly into an aquifer or directly into a tile drain and get exported to the water net, to a stream network. Now, the central plain area that's mapped as the central plains physiographic zone is not the only area in Southland where these cracking properties exist. So here we've taken the map and identified those areas where these shrink swell clays are susceptible under soil moisture conditions that are dry. So this gives an idea of, like, knowing these landscape factors and what can occur when can help match what your management actions are at the time. When soils are cracked, effluent irrigation onto these areas is a really high risk activity, because water can bypass straight through the soil zone, and often when the soils have been we see occurrences of green stream or dairy farm effluent discharges unintentional by this mechanism, where irrigation has occurred over a tile drain network and it's essentially created that preferential flow straight into a waterway. So if we know the risks, how they occur in the environment, we can do a lot better farm planning. So I'll take you next to the action section. So this is where we can use the physiographics to help guide what actions are most appropriate for a particular landscape setting. This table of actions comes from the National Science Challenge, and it combines a number of the mitigation activities that you'll already be aware of. But I can refine it by things like the contaminant pathway that I'm particularly interested in, such as overland flow. And what this gives me now is a refined list of potential actions that I could do in that landscape setting. There is a number of them. I can also filter and sort by nitrogen, high to low, phosphorus, sediment, and microbes. This work also tells you about the effectiveness, the relative cost, and the response of that action. The other part of the action tab takes you to a bit of a library where you can learn about a bit more about what these actions are. So for example, let's pick one, silt fences. What is a silt fence? showing it in action, why it's important. So this was an example taken actually from a roading construction project. So a lot of these potential actions are not just limited to the farm environment, but here is an example of how we can do this at a farm scale. So this comes from the Pomahake catchment group in Otago. It's a simple silt fence picked, put across an area that was identified to have a high risk of overland flow. And for most of the winter, it did very little until it had the spring rain, and it caught this. So this is what we're talking about, making these small actions that can ultimately, if everyone does this type of activity, make a big collective difference at the bottom of the catchment. So just quickly, there's also a number of little short animated videos to give you an idea of how the contaminants are transported in each physiographic environment. We also look at trying to link the cause and effect and what are the best actions, to best suited actions to minimise losses in these environments. Where we would like to go next is to obviously help inform that farm planning process. Bring all this information together to collectively work with industry to be able to provide this as an easier tool for farmers. We'd like to be able to do advanced analytics across areas so that a user can define their property, a paddock, to be able to compare your farm against the catchment, and be able to identify some of those priority areas where you get the best value for your mitigation actions. There's also some more science being undertaken where we're looking to, we have a two-year project, and again in through the National Science Challenge, to help to refine, validate and improve the classification that makes up the science behind landscape DNA. I'll leave that there.